Welcome to this special edition of Echotones, a daily audio digest for June 19th, 2023, day 6 of the historic Held v. State of Montana Youth Plaintiff Trial. I'm Joy LaClaire. This was the second week of the trial, which began on June 12, 2023, in the Lewis and Clark County District Court in Helena, Montana, Judge Kathy Seeley presiding. Attorneys for the 16 youth plaintiffs rested their case on Friday, June 16th. Today, the State of Montana's defense attorney, Lee McKenna of the Montana Department of Environmental Quality, called Christopher Dorrington, the director of the Department of Environmental Quality, to the stand. After answering questions by the defense attorney and cross-examination by plaintiff attorney Melissa Hornbein, the defense then called Sonia Nowakowski, administrator for the Air, Energy, and Mining Division at Montana DEQ. In this edition, we will hear this testimony, but due to broadcasting time limitations, the cross-examination of Ms. Nowakowski by plaintiff attorney Barbara Chillicott will be in the next edition of Echotone's Daily Audio Diary. As you will hear, Judge Seeley was called upon to make far more rulings on objections than during the first week. And now, the testimony by Department of Environmental Quality Director Christopher Norrington, appointed to that position by Governor Gianforte in 2021.
Good morning, Director Dorrington.
Good morning.
Defendants have designated you as a hybrid expert witness. That means that you possess factual information and expertise in the matter before the court. On page 31 of the court's final pretrial order, the court stated the issues of fact to be determined at trial. On the slide in front of you, there are two issues of fact from that pretrial order. Could you please read the first sentence?
Yes. Whether the injuries described by plaintiffs are caused by defendants' actions under MEPA provision 75-1201-2A, MCA.
In one word, what is that question asking?
In one word, that's about causation.
Could you read the second sentence, please?
Whether the injuries described by plaintiffs are likely to be redressed by the court granting plaintiffs remaining requests for relief.
In one word, what is that question asking?
Justiciability.
That this calls for a legal conclusion.
Your Honor, he's the director of the DEQ, and he has read the pretrial order and understands that the issues before the court are the matter that he's testifying about today.
Are you an attorney?
No.
He's not going to testify to legal conclusions. I understand what you're saying, Ms. McKenna, but he's already answered, so the objection's a little bit late, but he cannot answer those questions.
Do you intend to offer testimony today? What do you think about plaintiffs? They've been in the courtroom all week.
I frankly admire them. I listened to testimony, and I admire their grit and the determination. I even admire how diligently they pursued an issue that's important to them.
Do you invite them all to apply for jobs in state government?
Absolutely. Yeah. When Grace said one of her pieces was to potentially work in state government, I'd like to see her application someday.
We are going to spend quite a bit of time between your testimony and Ms. Nowakowski's testimony discussing a provision in MEPA 75-1201 subsection 2A. Which I am sometimes going to refer to as the MEPA provision at issue, or simply the MEPA provision. And I just want to be clear before we start questioning that when I say the MEPA provision at issue, or I say the MEPA provision, that is the statute that I am referring to. By the way, in your work at DEQ, have you ever heard anyone you work with refer to that statute, 75-1201 subsection A, as the MEPA limitation?
I've never heard that term until this trial.
Have you ever heard anyone refer to it as the MEPA climate change exception?
I've never heard it referred to that way, no.
Where did that come from?
Plaintiff's attorneys, I believe, for this trial. I've never heard it before until this trial. MEPA is the underlying permitting statute. That's the plaintiff's claim.
Are there any constitutional issues regarding the statute in this action?
The ultimate decision, Your Honor, that you'll make is whether the MEPA statute is constitutional.
Do you understand why DEQ is a defendant in this case?
I don't. There's a few things that have been convoluted in the discussion so far. If I may, Your Honor, if I can describe that just a bit.
Okay.
The underlying testimony so far surrounds MEPA, the Montana Environmental Policy Act, and then the request for remedy is to stop permitting. MEPA doesn't permit. The underlying statutes allow and guide the agency and give the agency requirements, which we have no authority to not do. Those permitting statutes are what we follow in order to permit. And we have no right with the changes enacted by May 10th, 2023, not to follow the law. I don't have an option as the state, which we've been referred to in testimony many, many times. I don't have an option not to follow the law.
And what would be an example? You can just give me the name of the permitting statute. Just an example, what type of permitting are you referring to by saying underlying statute?
Montana Strip and Underground Mining Act, MSUMRA, the Open Cut Act, which no one knows what that means. It's sand and gravel permitting. But there's several mining statutes. And then we have statutes that guide solid waste, hazardous waste. There's many underlying statutes which implement constitutional provision for a clean, healthy environment.
What are the different divisions of DEQ?
So within the Department of Environmental Quality, there's the Air, Energy, and Mining Division, the Waste Management Remediation Division, and the Water Quality Division. And then we have, under the deputy, we have operations, and I have a chief legal who has a team.
What does DEQ do?
We implement the laws of the state regarding environmental protection and balance fairly into our authority, that of natural resource development. We permit protectively.
And what is your mission statement?
Our mission is to champion a healthy environment for a thriving Montana.
What do each of the DEQ divisions do?
The Air, Energy, and Mining Division permits and conducts compliance activities for air quality, for energy. We have the State Energy Office, which is policy and programs around energy to include renewables. And then mining programs, we permit and conduct compliance activities in the mining realm. For Waste Management Remediation Division, people will know landfills, hazardous waste, radon, and then probably to most people, citizens of Montana, are Superfund sites, both state and federal Superfund. Within the Water Quality Division, we have bureaus and sections, but the work that they do is to permit subdivisions and conduct compliance activities around that. It's not well known, but it's highly contested through session. And then we work with public water supply, wastewater systems. We run the federal programs and have state primacy for water quality. That's probably it for the divisions.
How is this responsibility for government divided in Montana?
Three branches of government, the legislative, executive, judicial. Simply, the legislative branch makes the laws, the executive branch carries out the laws, and the judicial branch evaluates the law. The legislative branch, they enact law. We are the ones who implement, carry out the law, and the judicial branch evaluates it.
Where is DEQ in the separation of powers?
We're firmly in the middle. We're the ones who implement the law. We are not the ones who create the law.
I'm showing you Article 9 from the Montana Constitution. Can you tell us what Article 9, Section 1 provides?
Protection and improvement over environmental natural resources.
And could you please read for us the three provisions under Section 1?
Sure. Section 1, the state and each person shall maintain and improve a clean and healthful environment in Montana for present and future generations. 2, the legislature shall provide for the administration and enforcement of this duty. 3, the legislature shall provide adequate remedies for the protection of the environmental life support system from degradation and provide adequate remedies to prevent unreasonable depletion and degradation of natural resources.
Can DEQ ignore a statute?
No.
Can DEQ decide that it will only follow certain statutes?
No.
Can DEQ refuse to follow a statute?
No.
Is DEQ required to stay within its statutory authority?
Yes.
The subject of this litigation is NEPA, is that correct?
Correct.
Have plaintiffs challenged any substantive permitting decisions?
No, this trial is about NEPA.
Did plaintiffs go through the administrative process outlined in MAPA to challenge any of the permitting decisions admitted during Ms. Hedges' testimony?
No, the plaintiffs not sought or pursued administrative remedy.
What is the role of MEPA with regard to DEQ's actions?
It's a procedural statute. It's guided primarily to inform and create assessment of impacts for any one given project.
So if you could start with the statutory provision and then read the highlighted sections.
Sure. 75.1.102 sub 1 MCA, the Montana Environmental Policy Act, is procedural. 75.1.201.4a MCA, the agency may not withhold, deny, or impose conditions on any permit. 75.1.102.3b MCA, it is not the purpose of parts 1 through 3 of this chapter to provide for regulatory authority beyond authority explicitly provided for in existing statute.
And that last part, beyond authority explicitly provided for in existing statute, would those be the substantive statutes like consumer that you testified to a few minutes ago?
Correct.
As a director, is your understanding of MEPA that it does not give DEQ regulatory authority?
Correct. It expressly does not grant me additional authority. This was the statutory modification under House Bill 971 that became effective May 10th, 2023.
Does DEQ consider this amendment to 75.1.201, subsection 2A, to be the current law?
Yes.
How does DEQ regard the previous version of 75.1.201, subsection 2A?
Just as any other law that has been amended, the previous version is no longer. It's gone.
What generally are the differences between the 2023 version and the 2011 version?
The primary differences are those enacted in House Bill 971. Under the 2011 version, state agencies could not review actual or potential impacts which are regional, national, or global in nature. The MEPA review is required to solely focus on impacts within Montana. The 2023 version authorized the following changes. For the first time, there's no distinction between impacts within Montana and outside of Montana. State agencies are allowed to look beyond Montana borders to analyze actual or potential impacts. State agencies can now potentially review and consider regional, national, or global impacts of anything other than greenhouse gas emissions and corresponding impacts to the climate, provided that the state agency has the power to regulate the environmental impacts considered. An entirely new discretionary analysis under this MEPA provision was created, 75.1.201.2sub-B. If the U.S. Congress amends the Federal Clean Air Act to include carbon dioxide emissions as a regulated pollutant, state agencies would then have the discretion to analyze greenhouse gas emissions and corresponding impacts to the climate. The 2023 amendment changed the consideration of what impacts state agencies can consider, where they can consider them. The 2023 amendment changed how state agencies review impacts to determine significance. To determine what level of analysis should be conducted, an environmental assessment or EA or an environmental impact statement, EIS, state agencies must now consider whether the impossible...
I'm going to object. We're not clear where this is from. It's not from the language of the revised statute, and plaintiffs have not seen it before.
He's simply testifying to the differences between the statute, Your Honor, which is well within his knowledge as a director.
I think it's calling for a legal conclusion.
I'm going to overrule the objection, but I am going to tell you he is not a lawyer. He's not an expert on the law. And this interpretation is his interpretation that he's reading off a screen. So,
well, Your Honor, I have qualified him as an expert witness in environmental matters and public policy matters. He deals with environmental statutes.
No, environmental matters and public policy matters.
And he deals with
reading a statute and telling me what it means.
As the director of the agency, he is required.
Do you want me to just sustain the objection?
No, Your Honor. We're going to move on.
Move on.
Thank you. Has DEQ issued any new permits or permit amendments for which a MEPA review under the 2023 amended version of 75.1.201 subsection 2A?
I believe we've reviewed under an amendment, just one.
Were any of the DEQ permitted decisions that were introduced on Thursday through Ms. Hedges permitted while the 2023 version of MEPA was in effect?
No.
How about the MEPA environmental reviews admitted during Ms. Hedges' testimony? Were any of them completed under the 2023 version of 75.1.201 subsection 2A?
No.
They were all completed under the previous 2011 version, which no longer exists?
Correct.
Does it have any regulatory impact on DEQ's permitting decisions?
Not on the permitting decisions, no, because it doesn't apply to the underlying statutes in which we implement and conduct permitting activities.
How do you respond to the questions? Are the injuries described by plaintiffs caused by defendants' actions under MEPA 75.1.201 subsection 2A?
The injuries that plaintiffs have described are not fairly traceable to defendants' actions under 75.1.2012a MCA because it's amoeba trial, and that's not where we permit.
Plaintiff's expert, Dr. Jacobson, testified that his conclusion was policies are needed to effectuate the transition to clean energy. Do you agree that DEQ does not have the authority to stop permitting coal mining or natural gas plants?
Correct. We do not have the authority to not permit something that fully complies with the law.
If defendants lose this lawsuit, will DEQ have the authority to stop permitting coal mining or natural gas plants?
No.
If defendants lose this lawsuit, will DEQ continue to issue permits as required by substantive permitting statutes?
Yes, we'll continue to follow the law.
If defendants lose this lawsuit, will DEQ change its permitting practices under substantive permitting statutes?
No.
If defendants lose this lawsuit, will there be any reduction in Montana's greenhouse gas emissions as a result?
Objection, Your Honor, that calls for a legal conclusion.
Overrule.
If defendants lose this lawsuit, will there be any reduction in Montana's greenhouse gas emissions as a result?
Not as a direct result.
Does DEQ now have the authority to transition to renewable energy in the manner that plaintiffs?
No, plaintiffs have stated they would like to stop permitting and transition to strictly renewables, and that's not allowable. We can't simply do
that. I'm going to object, Your Honor. This isn't part of the relief the plaintiffs are asking for. It's simply part of plaintiff's expert testimony.
It's in proposed findings and conclusions submitted by plaintiffs. They request to transition to 100% renewable energy.
Well, I don't believe that's an issue, but that is a remedy that I have left out there. So, but you can go ahead and answer.
Would you like me to repeat the question?
Yeah, please. Thank you.
If defendants lose this lawsuit, will DEQ have the authority to transition to solely permitting renewable energy in the manner that plaintiffs seek?
No.
Why not?
Really, what we'll permit is what is submitted to us and fully complies with the law. We have no authority to do otherwise.
So if there's no law for you to implement, what happens?
Then we continue on as ordered to the agency. We follow the state law statute is given us.
In this trial, you've heard testimony from plaintiffs describing injuries, correct?
Yes.
Will those injuries be redressed if the court grants plaintiffs' remaining requests for relief?
No.
Thank you. No further questions.
Good morning, Director Dorrington. Melissa Hornbein for plaintiffs.
Hi, good morning.
You testified that DEQ's mission is to champion a healthy environment for a thriving Montana, correct?
Correct.
And it's true, isn't it, that the amount of greenhouse gases emitted into the atmosphere from DEQ permitted activities has an effect on the healthy environment of the state?
Objection calls for legal conclusion. Welcome, Roll.
DEQ conducts permitting activities that allow industry and individuals to emit non-zero emissions. Yes.
So you would agree that the amount of greenhouse gases emitted into the atmosphere by DEQ permit activities has an effect on the healthy environment of the state?
Objection. Exceeds strictly the direct, and Mr. Dorrington is not a scientist who's analyzed the effect on the state. He's experienced capacity for direct. Overruled, and I believe I heard that one of the agreements was he was going to be questioned by the plaintiffs and they were not going to recall or have him as their witness.
No, I don't think that was the basis of him not being testified. It was that the state wouldn't make a motion for a directed verdict. I believe that was the...
That's not what was represented. I don't know if you were here, but that's what I heard, was that they were going to allow them to question. So as far as beyond the scope of direct, I'm not going to grant that. And what was your other objection?
He's not a scientist that can testify as to health effects, Your Honor. He serves as a director. But I am concerned about the representations to the court, Your Honor, because I was specifically told that Ms. Nowakowski and the director were not going to testify because there was agreement with the plaintiffs that the state would not make a motion for a directed verdict and had nothing to do with, they were fully available and ready to testify on Friday. And I was told they weren't necessary because of this agreement, that the permitting decisions and other information were admitted through Ms. Hedges. And therefore, there was really no reason for them to testify.
Your Honor, Ms. McKenna hasn't been here during the entire trial yet. And the agreement that is reached and represented to the court is as the court standard.
Yeah, that was certainly my understanding. So I know you weren't here, but that's what I was told. So,
okay, it's not what I was told. So I apologize, Your Honor, but I was watching on Zoom even when I wasn't here. So that's not my understanding. But I understand that's what you were told. So
Your Honor, I would also offer that under Rule 611B, you have the discretion to allow us to exceed the scope of the direct.
Well, I understand that, but I would be much more concerned about it had the representation not been made to me that this was an arrangement that had been agreed to.
And that is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So as I said, I'm overruling the scope objection. And I also, this man has been presented as an expert on all this. So I'm going to let you ask him the question. We don't have to go deep into the science of climate change.
Thank you, Your Honor. I was simply asking him whether the amount of greenhouse gases emitted into the atmosphere has an effect on the healthy environment of the state, which is part of DEQ's mission statement. Was your answer yes?
No.
Mr. Dorrington, do you recollect that your deposition was taken in this case?
Mm-hmm.
And when you testified at your deposition, you testified under oath, correct?
Correct.
Question from counsel. Does the amount of greenhouse gases admitted into the atmosphere have any effect on the mission of the Department of the Environmental Quality? Yes. I would say, so going back to the mission, a healthy environment for a thriving Montana is subject to emitters achieving and sustaining levels of emissions under state and federal statutory limits. So yes. Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
And Director Dorrington, you would agree with me, wouldn't you, that DEQ has the authority to implement all of the provisions of state law that apply to that mission. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that includes the Montana Constitution, correct?
State law follows the constitutional provisions, yes.
Is the Constitution a state law?
Yeah, I mean, it's all a regular
court. Calls for a legal conclusion. Well, overruled. I know you're not a lawyer, but I've let you answer some of them, so I'm going to let you answer a little bit if you can.
Mr. Dorrington, you testified earlier that you don't have an option not to follow the law. Do I have that correct?
That's what I said, yes.
Do you have an option not to follow the Constitution?
No.
And if a law is unconstitutional, does that mean that DEQ will follow it?
Objection calls for legal conclusions.
Director Dorrington, are you familiar with Article 9, Section 1 of the Montana Constitution? And you would agree with me, would you not, that the state and each person shall maintain and improve a clean and healthful environment in Montana for present and future generations? That's what the Constitution says, correct?
Yes.
And that's one of the provisions at issue in this case, correct?
It is.
Is DEQ subject to this provision?
Yes.
And you also testified under direct that you are very familiar with MEPA. You said that you had overseen hundreds of processes. Is that correct?
Yes.
This is the policy statement for the MEPA statute, correct?
As I understand, yes.
And one of the provisions of that statement is that one of the purposes of the statute is fulfill the responsibilities of each generation as trustee of the environment for succeeding generations. Did I read that correctly?
Yes, you read that correctly.
And to ensure for all Montanans a safe, healthful, productive, and aesthetically and culturally pleasing surroundings. Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
I want to direct your attention to subsection 3 of the policy statement. The legislature recognizes that each person is entitled to a healthful environment, that each person is entitled to use and enjoy that person's private property free from undue government regulation.
Your Honor, the statute speaks for itself and counsel is testifying. We all know what the statute says. That is correct, and we've heard a lot of it in this trial, so I'll let you go ahead.
That each person has the right to pursue life's basic necessities, and that each person has a responsibility to contribute to the preservation and enhancement of the environment. The implementation of these rights requires the balancing of the competing interests associated with the rights by the legislature in order to protect the public health, safety, and welfare. Do I have that correct?
Yes.
DEQ is subject to this provision as well, correct?
Yes.
And you discussed this provision, which I believe counsel referred to as the provision at issue in this case. You're familiar with this provision, correct?
Objection, Your Honor. This is the previous version, 2011, which is, Your Honor, specifically said is not at issue in this case. It's the 2023 version that's at issue in this case.
Your Honor, I would point out that your order on summary judgment basically said that the claims plaintiffs have brought under this section apply as well under the 2023 amendment. I am going to be talking about past permitting actions that were undertaken pursuant to this section, and I'm asking that the witness be allowed to testify to this section.
Well, I have stated that any action by this court would be on the 2023 amendment or the version, but I also have said that it was a clarification, so I am going to overrule the objection and allow you to proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. until May 10th of this year, DEQ's NEPA reviews to implement permitting actions were undertaken pursuant to this language, correct, Director Dorrington?
Correct.
So in permitting fossil fuel or other energy generating facilities, DEQ did not consider, quote, the actual or potential impacts beyond Montana's border as part of its permitting decisions, correct?
We followed the law that was prior amended in 2011, yes.
And is that the law?
Your Honor, counsel is misstating the law. She's been permitting decisions. This is the MEPA statute. The directors clearly testified that MEPA and environmental reviews are distinctly separate from permitting decisions. Counsel's conflating the two of them. That's the whole basis of their lawsuit.
Can I lay some foundation, Your Honor?
Well, you can, and he answered her question as she asked it. He's the expert, so overruled. Go ahead.
Director Dorrington, in order to issue a permit, for example, for a coal mine, DEQ has to go through a MEPA process, correct?
DEQ has to conduct a MEPA analysis on any state action, and that would include coal mine permitting.
Thank you. So a permit cannot issue without the process under MEPA having occurred, whether that's an EA or an EIS.
That's correct.
Thank you. Can you respond to the question I asked earlier, which is that I believe you responded in the affirmative that in MEPA review actions conducted prior to May 10th of this year, they were conducted in accordance with the provision that's on the screen in front of you, correct?
For MEPA analysis prior to May 10th of 2023, we followed the law that was in place at that time.
DEQ has permitted strip and underground coal mining activities, correct?
Yes.
And you would agree with me that coal extraction, transportation, and combustion leads to the emission of greenhouse gases, correct?
It's a multi-part question. For mining and mine permitting, there's actually very little, and it depends on which mine you're talking about. The combustion of coal, which is entirely separate and not conducted within a mine permit, yes, there are emissions that would be constituted as greenhouse gases. I want to be clear, this, and this equals this, but that's not the way the law is enacted by the agency. We permit mines, and then we issue air quality permits for, in this case, power generating facilities that consume fossil fuels.
So, Director Dorrington, I'm happy to break this down. I agree it was a compound question. I'm asking about whether these actions result in the emission of greenhouse gases. And your opinion on that as an expert in this case.
Objection, Your Honor. He's not a scientist, and this is way beyond the scope of the director.
Overruled.
Would you agree that coal extraction results in some amount of greenhouse gas emissions?
The extraction of coal by machinery, for sure, emits greenhouse gases. I mean, you have emissions from the diesel power of certain tractors and equipment, for sure, yes.
And the transportation of coal results in greenhouse gas emissions, correct?
In the transport.
Objection, Your Honor. This is agreed upon back already. This is cumulative.
Which part of it is agreed upon?
Mr. Russell just represented to me that we stipulated to provision in plaintiff's contentions that greenhouse gases, I can find it in 1 second. This evidence is cumulative. It's already stipulated to.
Agreed fact number 20, Your Honor.
Well, I don't think there was any agreement or at least any statement as to what aspect, what causes those emissions. So overrule.
I mean, again, this is not the Department of Transportation. It's the Department of Environmental Quality. And Mr. Dorrington is not an expert in transportation of the materials that counsel is asking about.
Your Honor, I'm asking him about something that he testified to under oath in his deposition. I'm happy to bring up that testimony if that would be helpful.
I've overruled your objection.
Okay.
Go ahead and ask the question or answer it if you remember what it was.
Does the transportation of coal result in the emission of greenhouse gases?
Yes.
And does the combustion of coal result in the emission of greenhouse gases?
Yes.
Thank you. It's also true, isn't it, that DEQ continues to permit surface coal mining and reclamation activities?
Yes.
It's also true that coal mine operators cannot legally operate without a permit issued by DEQ, correct?
Yes.
And you would agree with me that in issuing those permits, DEQ does not include in its analysis the greenhouse gas emissions that result from the combustion of the mined coal, correct?
Yes, if I can clarify. I mean, so for a mine that mines coal and it's sent somewhere within the mining permit, we don't include an analysis of the combustion of that coal.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You are tuned to KGVM Bozeman, Gallatin Valley Community Radio.
Last week, we heard testimony that prior to 2011,
DEQ did conduct an analysis of CO2 emissions for various projects. You were here when Ms. Hedges testified, correct?
I was present, yes.
Do you recollect that she testified that with the permitting and MEPA review associated with the Silver Bow Generation project, DEQ analyzed and concluded that 2.38 million tons per year of CO2, representing an 11% increase over Montana's statewide total, would result from the permitting of that generation project, correct? Do you have any reason to dispute that?
I don't recall in detail her testimony by any stretch. I was present, and if this is the same slide, then yes, she did testify to it.
And similarly with the Roundup Power Project, 8 million tons per year of CO2 would be released, which represented a 37% increase over Montana's statewide total.
Is your standing question whether Ann Hedges testified to this?
And whether you have any reason to dispute that testimony.
Objection.
I believe she did testify, yes, and I don't have any reason to say that number is wrong.
And then the last example is the Highwood Generating Station. And my question here is, did DEQ, to your knowledge, conduct an analysis of CO2 emissions associated with this project when the MEPA review was conducted prior to 2011?
I wasn't at DEQ at the time, so I don't know the answer to that.
Do you have any reason to dispute the testimony?
No.
Assuming that the testimony is correct, you would agree, would you not, that these analyses show that it was possible for DEQ to analyze greenhouse gas emissions, particularly CO2 increases as a result of fossil fuel permitting that are likely to result from the permits it issues?
Objection, cause for speculation. Is it possible? Well, if you can answer.
Can you restate your question simply?
Yes.
Would be helpful.
These examples demonstrate that DEQ is capable of conducting a CO2 analysis associated with its permitting activities, correct?
I believe that CO2 is an emission that applicants can submit information on and that DEQ can assess whether that information is received and whether it's in scale with what the applicant submits. Yes.
Director Dorrington, does DEQ have the ability to conduct an analysis of CO2 emissions associated with the projects it permits?
Ms. Hornbein, what I'm trying to clarify as testimony goes forward, you have two different methods, one CO2, one CO2E, and we loosely reference all emissions as GHGs or greenhouse gas emissions. Some are, some aren't. CO2 analysis, CO2E analysis, a greenhouse gas analysis, a climate impacts analysis, all are different. So could the agency review something by prescription ordered by the court? I don't think it's the court's right or duty to give us a prescription. Could we look at CO2 emissions? Yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We also heard in Ms. Hedges' testimony last week that after the 2011 provision went into effect, DEQ relied on that provision in explaining why it could not conduct such a climate analysis on a number of occasions. And I want to give you just a couple of examples. DEQ complied with this provision, 75-1-201-2A, in permitting the 2019 Rosebud Coal Mine Area F expansion, correct?
Objection. That's the previous law. The director testified that no longer exists. Overruled.
When DEQ conducted the MEPA review for the Rosebud Area F coal mine expansion, it relied on 75-1-201-2A in not conducting an analysis of climate change impacts, correct?
I think that's correct, yes.
Okay. And similarly, in the AM5 expansion, DEQ also relied on this provision, stating pursuant to 75-1-201-2A, an environmental review may not include a review of actual or potential impacts beyond Montana's borders. Additionally, it may not include actual or potential impacts that are regional, national, or global in nature. Because climate change impacts extend beyond Montana's borders and are global in nature, climate change analysis has been excluded from this analysis.
Objection. I'll just make a standing objection to any questions relating to the previous version of 75-1-201 subsection 2A. Thank you. Overrule.
Since you quoted it, I believe this is what we would have stated. And to be clear, we would have followed the law at the time, which was a 2011 version.
That's clear. Thank you. When you started at DEQ, you testified that you began as Division Administrator for Air, Energy, and Mining, correct?
I did, yes.
In that role, did you work on climate change-related issues?
There was an analysis, the Climate Solutions Plan of 2020, that I was party to some of the dialogue. I had representatives within the agency that attended the bulk of those conversations. I did not attend the bulk of those conversations.
And are you familiar with the 2017 Montana Climate Assessment?
I'm not really. I know it exists. I know it's been testified to, but I'm not. I'm certainly not an expert in that document.
Is this something that DEQ ever reviewed as part of any analysis that ever conducted? Through your role, your prior role as division administrator, or your current role as director, are you aware that fossil fuel production accounts for 3.7 billion tons of cumulative CO2 emissions between the years of 1960 and 2019?
You're showing a graph that it does. I don't know the answer.
MEPA doesn't allow for this type of information in an environmental analysis, does it?
I would point your own slide, Ms. Hornbein. It's clear that MEPA tracked the department and other state agencies to exclude analysis beyond the borders of the state.
Thank you. Are you familiar with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC?
I attended this trial last week when there was testimony relevant to IPCC. But prior to that, I wasn't familiar, and certainly not deeply familiar with its role or its work.
Would you agree that every ton of CO2 emissions adds to global warming?
I think you're calling for me to speculate about that. I don't really know. It's clearly IPCC's quote.
So you don't agree or disagree with that?
Objection. Asked and answered. Sustained.
Can DEQ conduct a CO2 emissions analysis for any given project's environmental review under MEPA?
Not under MEPA.
Can DEQ conduct a greenhouse gas emissions analysis to the extent that that's different?
Can you clarify your question, whether you're talking about MEPA or under the underlying statutes?
Under MEPA.
No.
Thank you. Can DEQ conduct a climate impacts analysis under MEPA?
No.
Director Durantini previously testified that DEQ does not have the authority to not permit something that complies with the law. Do I have that correct?
Yes.
So if a proposed project, for example, a coal mine, let's just use that as an example, is at issue and it is determined not to comply with the clean and healthful provision of the Montana Constitution, can DEQ issue a permit for that?
Objection. The director clearly testified that the legislature enacts the law and DEQ implements the law. Ms. Hornbein is conflating the Constitution and asking the director for something that clearly exceeds DEQ's authority.
The director already opined that the Constitution is also a law of the state.
Can you repeat the question?
The director previously testified that the agency does not have the authority not to permit something that complies with the law. Making sure I get my negatives right here. My question was that if that proposed project violates the Constitution, does DEQ have the ability to deny that permit?
Further objection calls for legal conclusion. Sustained. I don't think he can make that kind of a determination.
Director Dorrington, you testified earlier that MEPA is a purely procedural statute and that DEQ is primarily concerned with implementing other provisions of law.
Objection mischaracterizes testimony.
Can you tell me what your testimony was earlier with respect to MEPA versus other statutes that DEQ has the authority to implement?
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I would say you did mischaracterize it. My point then was that MEPA is a statute that we have to follow. Outside of MEPA, which is not a permitting statute, we have other statutes that are also law that we have to follow.
Does DEQ ever consider Montana's constitution in making any of its decisions?
Objection calls for legal conclusion. Well, I guess you can tell us if that's a consideration. I mean, do you have a box for that?
He's agreed that the constitution is one of the things that governs DEQ's mission statement and the work that it does. I'm curious if the agent ever considers the constitution in making a decision.
Ms. Hornbein, you already asked me that, but the constitution is the underpinning of statute, the underpinning of the work that we do.
So DEQ does consider it?
Objection asked and answered several times. Well, yeah, I mean, my understanding is you're telling us you're aware of the constitution, but you as an agency director follow the law unless somebody tells you that it's unconstitutional. Is that what I'm getting out of it?
Yeah. If you're asking if there's a checkbox by my staff that says, does this follow the Constitution? There isn't a checkbox somewhere. It's the underpinning of what our agency does is follow the law. Many laws are environmental in nature and protective in nature, and we follow those laws. MEPA is one of them, and so are the underlying permitting statutes. They're not the same.
So if a law is found to be unconstitutional, you would stop following that law, correct, by a court?
I think what you're asking me is the court decides that MEEPA is unconstitutional. Yes, the agency will have action that's necessary to follow the law.
Thank you, Director Dorrington. I have no further questions.
Redirect?
No redirect, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. You may step down.
Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Nowakowski.
Good morning.
DEQ has designated you as a hybrid expert witness. That means that you have both factual information and expertise in the matter before the court, which is whether 75.1.201 subsection 2A is facially unconstitutional. I'm now going to ask you a series of questions about your work experience. Where do you work?
I work at the Department of Environmental Quality.
What is your title?
I'm the administrator for the Air, Energy, and Mining Division at the DEQ.
What are the different programs under the Air, Energy, and Mining Division?
Obviously, Air, Energy, and Mining. Explain a little bit what those programs do. For example, the air quality program implements, we not only do the permitting for air quality, but we also do all of the monitoring, smoke forecasting. I think many people are familiar with the Today's Air website, the most popular website in state government. We also do planning and preparation to ensure we comply with federal requirements in the air program. And then we have field services, which is compliance and the inspections. Energy is the State Energy Office of Montana, and they have a series of duties. They are designated again by the federal government as the State Energy Program. So they have a variety of duties ranging from wind and solar bonding and an alternative energy program to a variety of kind of pass-through programs that come through the federal government as well. And then finally, mining. And in mining, there are also four sections where we have coal mining, we have open cut or sand and gravel, and hard rock mining. And then finally, we have our field services and technology, which is again the compliance arm of that division and ensures that we're completing inspections and that the folks who hold these permits are meeting the requirements of those permits.
Do you, as the administrator, work with environmental laws relating to each of these programs?
I do.
What are some of the laws that you work with?
In the area of air quality, I spend a lot of time in Title 75, Chapter 2, which outlines those duties related to Montana's Clean Air Act. Energy is a little bit more diverse. We have laws in Title 75 as well as in Title 90 that we administer. And then on the mining program, largely centered around Title 82, Chapter 4. Title 82, Chapter 4 are very specific substantive statutes that direct us and how to implement laws and enforce mining laws in Montana.
Is there a specific purpose to the mining statutes?
The purpose of the mining statutes is, again, to provide the regulatory authority to permit those mines and then make sure that they comply with those permits.
Is the purpose of the mining statutes reclamation?
Largely, yes. Most of them are titled, for example, it's the Open Cut Mining Reclamation Act. It is the Strip and Underground Mining Reclamation Act. And it's the Metal Mine Reclamation Act. I work closely with the Montana Environmental Policy Act, or MEEPA, as we're all quite familiar with. Again, as I mentioned, in Title 90, spend a lot of time. That's where energy emergency powers reside. So I'm familiar with those as well. Our work occasionally dabbles in Title 69 as well in the Energy Office, whereas our Energy Office has a say in the development of resource plans that utilities put together. We get to provide comments to the Public Service Commission.
Is MEEPA considered in DEQ's work?
Yes, MEEPA is. Whenever we take a state action, we consider MEEPA.
Is MEEPA considered specifically in your work?
It is, yes.
Do you review any documents concerning MEEPA in your work at DEQ?
I do review MEEPA documents. I certainly don't review every MEEPA document. Funds for the larger projects are often brought to my desk to take a quick look at, but I'm quite familiar with some of the MEEPA documents that go through our permitting programs.
Can you explain what documents you review and perhaps give a few examples?
Sure. And also, I think it's important to distinguish between the different types of environmental review. We have an environmental assessment or an EA, and those are generally shorter in nature. But again, they meet the procedure outlined in MEEPA. And then there's the longer documents, the environmental impact statements. For example, currently we're working on a draft environmental impact statement in conjunction with the U.S. Forest Service for some work at the Stillwater Mine that's going to be happening. And I have been involved in reviewing and taking a look at that draft document, which should be released later this week. I am quite familiar with MEPA and the MEPA process. Prior to working at the Department of Environmental Quality, I spent 10 years in the Legislative Environmental Policy Office as a nonpartisan research analyst there. And in my duty as a research analyst, I staffed and served, helped serve as staff to the Environmental Quality Council. And the Environmental Quality Council is the body that oversees MEPA. The Environmental Quality Council was established in MEPA. So I have quite a bit of experience working with MEPA in my previous work as well.
Did you begin work at DEQ in your current position?
Yes.
Is DEQ a state agency in the executive branch of government?
Yes.
And your previous position was in the legislative branch?
Yes, it was, as a nonpartisan research analyst as well as the nonpartisan research director.
What does the Environmental Quality Council do?
The duties of the Environmental Quality Council are outlined in 75.1.324 MCA, as well as some other spots throughout the statute. But the Environmental Quality Council is a statutorily created committee of the legislature. It includes 17 members. There's 6 representatives, 6 senators, 4 public members, as well as 1 non-voting member from the governor's office on that body. They oversee MEPA. They oversee the implementation of MEPA. They also oversee and have oversight of the Department of Environmental Quality, the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation, and Fish, Wildlife, and Parks.
What did your work at the EQC do? What did it entail?
Well, at the EQC, when I'm working in service to the EQC and working in the Legislative Environmental Policy Office, I did significant research on environmental policy. I conducted studies at the request of the EQC. I drafted a lot of legislation as well. I staffed the Standing Committee of the Senate Natural Resources Committee for several sessions, staffed energy committees throughout, drafted amendments for that legislation. I spent a lot of time in Title 69 on energy policies. I don't know if there's an area of Title 69 that I didn't probably touch over my time at the legislature. I also worked a great deal in Title 75, more specifically in the Clean Air Act, as well as a little bit in some of the reclamation statutes and some of the energy programs that are in Title 75. And then obviously in Title 82, Chapter 4, the mining, as well as I was involved in some legislation in Title 82 related to oil and gas in terms of bill drafting.
And did you work at all with MEPA when you're in legislative office?
I did. I worked a lot on MEPA. I drafted many pieces of MEPA legislation. I think I took a quick look through the MEPA handbook, and in the years that I was there from 2007 to 2021, the only session where MEPA wasn't revisited by the legislature was 2015.
How many years did you work on Montana energy and Montana environmental policy during your time working for the Legislative Environmental Policy Office?
I was with the Environmental Policy Office for roughly 10 years, but in my 5 years as the research director, I also continued to work on energy and environmental policy, so for a total of 15 years.
If you had to estimate how many bills you drafted in the areas of environmental law and energy, what would your estimate be?
Hundreds. Hundreds of bills. I typically drafted at least 80 to 100 bills every session over 15 years.
Are you an expert in drafting bills on environmental law?
Yes, I like to say I'm an expert in drafting bills. I think the Montana Bill Drafting Manual is permanently imprinted on my brain.
Are you an expert in drafting bills for proposed changes to MEPA?
I am, yes. I spent a lot of time working on MEPA legislation over the years.
For that job, tell us what you did concerning MEPA.
In the Environmental Policy Office, as I already stated, we're all in service to the EQC, which oversees MEPA. And so a big part of the responsibilities of, I hate to give you another acronym, but the Legislative Environmental Policy Office, we often just call it LEPO. We maintain a database where all EAs and all EISs prepared by the state are archived in that database. We provide training to state employees as well as the public on MEPA, develop handbooks, develop research products at the request of the EQC.
Did you provide any trainings for other people to understand MEPA?
Sure. I was part of the trainings. I would say, you know, there was a deep bench of experts in the LEPO office on MEPA. And
in your career, including your previous job at LEPO and your current job at DEQ, how many years have you worked with MEPA statutes?
I've been working with MEPA for about 17 years now. I think I have a pretty unique understanding. I'm one of a few fortunate people who have had the experience of getting to follow these statutes, not only from the inception of the idea to the hearings before the legislature, the amendments that went into those ideas, and then now in my role in DEQ, getting to implement those ideas.
Before we go any further and explain your work history, you mentioned the term nonpartisan earlier. Tell us what that means to you.
In the strict sense of the word, nonpartisan means you're free from party affiliation. When I worked at the legislature, nonpartisan meant I worked for all 150 legislators. When I would talk about nonpartisan, or people would ask me, well, what does that mean? I would say it means regardless of who asks me the question, I'm going to give them the same answer. I think it also meant in the legislature, I identified myself with the institution as opposed to its occupants.
Is your work at DEQ nonpartisan?
Yes, I believe my work at DEQ is absolutely nonpartisan. I identify myself with the laws that we are charged with implementing and enforcing, regardless of who's in office. House Bill 971, enacted by the legislature in 2023.
What is your understanding of plaintiff's claims regarding the statute?
My understanding is there's a constitutional challenge to this statute.
Let's talk about when the current law, HB 971, became effective and how that relates to plaintiff's exhibits that were admitted through Ms. Hedges.
Your Honor, I'll call. I will object to this line of questioning as calling for a legal conclusion.
I haven't asked any questions yet.
Well, let her ask the question.
Did you watch and listen to Ms. Hedges' testimony last Thursday?
Yes, I did.
What is your general understanding of the documents that plaintiffs introduced through Ms. Hedges during her testimony?
There were a series of documents, and I think there was a series of some permitting decisions that were submitted related to coal mines, as well as maybe a couple air quality permits. And then there were also the associated environmental reviews that were conducted on some of those same projects.
Were any of the permits introduced into evidence during Ms. Hedges' testimony permitted since HB 971 became law?
No, they weren't.
And that was on May 10th, 2023?
Correct.
Were any of the environmental reviews introduced into evidence during Ms. Hedges' testimony permitted in the last month since May 10th, 2023?
No, they were not.
Does DEQ consider the 2023 amendment HB 971 to 75.1.201 subsection 2A to be the current law?
Yes.
How does DEQ consider that law?
It is a law that we must implement and follow.
How does DEQ regard the previous version of 75.1.201 subsection 2A?
It's no longer the law.
Can you explain this slide?
I think this is important. I will say I drafted the 2011 legislation at the request of then Senator Keene. And I do think there are some substantial differences between the 2011 legislation and the 2023 legislation. And I think these circles speak to that, that the 2011 legislation put some geographic arms around the human environment. It said the human environment inside Montana's boundaries. And again, when we're talking about human environment, we're talking about biological, aesthetic, social, economic, physical, and cultural. It's big, but 2011 put some arms around that. 2023 law removed those geographic arms, so to speak. Instead, it is explicitly now a statute that speaks to whether or not a climate change or greenhouse gas and climate change analysis is conducted. And I think that's important. Let's take, for example, the 2011 law again said inside Montana's boundaries. So we didn't look at items that were national, regional, or global in nature. So if I take that a step further and I talk about mercury, mercury is something the DEQ through the Air Quality Act and its rules regulates. But mercury knows no continental boundaries. It goes up into the atmosphere and comes down all over. And so under the 2011 law, again, say a coal-fired power plant sought a permit, an air quality permit, we couldn't look at the regional, national, or global impacts of the emission of mercury. 2023 law changes that. If we receive a power plant application, we don't look at greenhouse gases. That is prohibited. However, we can look at the national, regional, and global impacts of mercury. I think the 2023 law also introduced this new level of discretion where it says DEQ may, or not DEQ specifically, excuse me, a state agency may conduct an environmental analysis that includes greenhouse gases and climate change if the U.S. Congress regulates carbon dioxide under the Clean Air Act. And I think that's going to raise some really interesting discussions about whether or not that has occurred. We're already getting indications. So discussions about whether or not that has occurred. And then secondly, when and how DEQ uses that discretion, if it has occurred.
Would you describe that as a significant change?
I would, yes.
Are there any other differences between the 2023 version and the 2011 version?
Those are the ones I'm aware of. And again, I'm basing my thoughts here on this from my experience as well as a bill drafter, which we're pounded into our head, plain meaning of the statute. If you need to go to what people said at the podium, then you have failed as a bill drafter. And so I'm going again with the plain meaning, the words on the page, and those, that's my interpretation of the words on the page and the difference between the words on the page in 2011 and the words on the page in 2023.
Has DEQ issued any new permits or permit amendments for which a MEPA review under the 2023 amended version, so HB 971 of 751-201-2A?
Yes, they have. And I think it's important though to make some distinction there. We've heard a little bit of testimony throughout last week about some of the draft proposals. The draft, I think we're the Laurel Generating Station, a Yellowstone Generating Station as we're calling it now. That's a draft that's out for public comment. But we have done some final EAs as well under 971. We issue dozens of permitting, take dozens of state actions that are issuance of permits and therefore trigger MEPA. I'm familiar with a couple in the air quality program that we've done. I think this is also important to point out. So, for example, Ash Grove Cement has received a permit amendment and had an associated EA completed since 2010. This permit amendment was because of some plant modernization and actual reduction in emissions. So again, we're not just permitting increases in emissions. When you change the bottom line of your amendment, you also have to revisit your permit. Another was for Big Sky Energy, a compressor station, and the associated change in the air quality because, again, of an upgrade that was happening there and will reduce emissions.
Have any of the things that you've just talked about, Ash Grove and Big Sky, were they at all introduced as exhibits in this case by plaintiff?
They were not that I'm aware of.
No. Has there been any discussion of them by plaintiffs in the case?
No, not that I am aware of.
Were any of these things mentioned in the original complaint?
They were not.
Did you read the final pretrial order?
I did, yes.
Are any of these things mentioned in the final pretrial order?
They're not.
Do you or does anyone that you work with at DEQ ever refer to 751-201 subsection 2A as the MEPA limitation?
No, I haven't heard that term until this trial.
Do you or anyone you work with at DEQ ever refer to 751-201 subsection 2A as the MEPA climate change exception?
No.
Let's talk about MEPA. What is MEPA?
When we talk about MEPA, I think two important points of MEPA, public participation and public disclosure. And when we talk about public participation, you need to point out it's not public relations. This isn't a vote. This is about public information. It's also a two-way street. The DEQ is putting forward information. DEQ is also taking information from the public. And there are no parameters around what the public can or can't tell us. And they tell us all sorts of things, and we appreciate it. And where we have regulatory authority, we consider those comments. And so that's the first part is public participation. Again, two-way street, the exchange of information. Second part, when we talk about public disclosure, that really gets to the heart of MEPA. And so when we talk about MEPA, I always take MEPA in three parts. The first is the spirit of MEPA, which is to declare a state policy that will encourage productive and enjoyable harmony between humans and their environment, to protect the right to use and enjoy private property free of undue government regulations, to promote efforts that will prevent, mitigate, or eliminate damage to the environment and biosphere and stimulate the health and welfare of humans, to enrich the understanding of the ecological systems and natural resources important to the state. So that's the spirit of MEPA. The second part of MEPA is the letter of the law, and that's part two. And that's where we go into the development of an EA, an environmental assessment, or an environmental impact statement, an EIS. The interdisciplinary approach that we take to the development of that document, what that document looks like, how the public is included in that discussion. Again, the letter of the law. And then finally, the third part of MEPA is the Environmental Quality Council, which is the statutory body created with oversight of MEPA.
When is a MEPA review necessary?
When you're talking about when a MEPA review is necessary, the first step you need to take is you have to determine whether or not this is a proposed state action. And you think that would be an easy question to answer, but it's not always. There are certain exemptions. There's categorical exclusions. I think there's roughly 28 categorical exclusions now throughout the Montana Code annotated about what doesn't have to be included in MEPA. administrative, ministerial, maintenance, socioeconomic, and some staff that don't have to be included. And so there is a back and forth. Is this a maintenance action? No, generally it's not. We almost always err on the side of this is a state action. You will do MEPA. And then the second step of the process, which I've already talked a little bit about, is there going to be an impact to the Montana human environment? And again, the 2011 law had put some arms around that, and those have since been removed. So that is kind of the first steps of when you're determining if a MEPA review is necessary. Then you take the next steps, determining whether or not you need to do an EA or an EIS. There's some give and take in those timelines, discussions about significance as the next one does. And that's where then you embark on your EA or your EIS process.
What is an impact under MEPA?
This is taken from the MEPA handbook. Any change from the present condition of the environmental resource or issue as a result of the agency action. Impacts can be adverse, beneficial, or both. And the extent to which you kind of look at those impacts really depends on the EA versus the EIS, which format you're under.
Just to clarify, what is the relationship of the EA? Versus how do you make the decision of the EA versus the EIS?
That's based on significance. You have these discussions, you have these scientists and engineers and project sponsors who weigh in and talk about what the impact will be and whether or not that impact is significant to the human environment. And then that directs you on whether or not you do the more abbreviated environmental assessment or the more lengthy EIS.
What about greenhouse gas emissions and climate change? Is that something DEQ considers under the current 2023 law of MEPA?
Under MEPA, Montana DEQ or any state agency is prohibited from looking at that issue of greenhouse gas emissions or climate impacts. I should also point out, though, it's very important to make sure we have those distinctions between where we have MEPA review, the procedural act of doing your MEPA analysis, and at the same parallel track, you have your regulatory action. And your regulatory action is where your authority resides. And so I think that's really important then where we talk about this, where your regulatory authority resides. Before the 2023 law was enacted, the term greenhouse only appears in the entire Montana Code annotated four times, twice for actual regulation of a greenhouse and twice for some pretty significant tax abatements that are available for projects that limit greenhouse gas or promote renewable energy. The term climate change appeared nowhere in the Montana Code annotated.
You've explained that the terms greenhouse gases or climate change do not appear in the Montana Code annotated. Are there laws that DEQ implements that deal with renewable energy?
The state energy program, we have a very active transportation program within that state energy program. And under that, DEQ has distributed roughly $2 million for EV infrastructure throughout the state. We've spent distributed through federal dollars and settlement dollars, roughly $7 million towards electric buses across Montana. As well as for other medium and heavy duty electric vehicles. We're partnering right now with the Montana Department of Transportation, where we'll be leveraging roughly $50 million in federal national electric vehicle infrastructure funding to again build out the EV infrastructure in Montana. And we recently applied for another $50 million, actually, I think, in competitive grants to leverage more private investment in electric vehicle infrastructure. You have an example of a solar panel in accordance with Title 75, Chapter 25. The energy program oversees an alternative energy revolving loan program where we provide low interest loans to folks who are interested in putting solar panels. We've distributed roughly $18 million for distributed generation. I think we compiled some data recently that program has led to the development of about 3.9 megawatts of solar in Montana, which is roughly 10% of the total distributed solar in the entire state. So pretty impressive. We oversee also the state energy building conservation program, which is housed in Title 90. And that program authorizes us to work with the Department of Administration. So when the state is moving forward on building projects, they're considering energy efficiency and the prospects of renewables. And through that program, we've saved the state roughly $2.5 million in utility bills.
There was testimony last week about various studies and climate information that was, air quotes, shared with the state. Are you familiar with any of these plans?
Yes, I'm quite familiar with these two plans in particular, Montana Climate Change Action Plan from 2007 and the Montana Climate Solutions Plan from 2020.
Can you provide some factual background?
I certainly can. I kind of cut my teeth on the Montana Climate Change Action Plan at the same time that then Governor Schweitzer was embarking on the 2007 plan. The Environmental Quality Council began its own study of climate change in Montana. And I, for better or for worse, got to lead that study. And we were actively engaged in the Environmental Quality Council in a discussion of climate change and tracking what the governor's task force on this issue was working on. And then, for example, I think in the Climate Change Action Plan, there were five areas that they took a look at: energy supply, cross-cutting issues, transportation, residential, commercial, industrial, and I think finally they had some waste management, forestry in there. The Montana Climate Solutions Plan from 2020, it talked about that these recommendations, some could be implemented immediately, some would require support of the Montana State Legislature. Again, it talked about long-term involvement of policymakers, future legislatures being engaged in this discussion. And the 2020 plan had similar language, again, that this isn't something that these plans couldn't be implemented overnight and weren't something that the executive could do on its own.
Did DEQ have a role in the development of any of these plans?
DEQ was involved in the development of both of these plans. Again, I'm most familiar with the 2007 plan. I worked regularly with the staff at the DEQ and those task forces. They worked on that plan. The 2007 plan, I think we already heard testimony, had roughly 54 recommendations included in it for various actions. I think the 2020 plan had 37 recommendations.
What, if anything, did the recommendations say about a prohibition on permitting coal, oil, or natural gas extraction in Montana?
None of the recommendations included that.
No prohibition?
No prohibition.
What role, if any, did the recommendations contemplate for both the legislative and the executive in advancing climate policies?
To take action on this was going to take action by both the legislature and the executive.
Can the executive act independently of the legislature?
There were some recommendations the executive could. Again, I'll go back to the 2007 plan. I think one of the recommendations had to do with lighting on the Capitol complex. And we certainly saw some abrupt changes in when the lights went off and on at the Capitol complex. And that was implementing one of these recommendations.
What, if anything, did the plans include about information about greenhouse gas emissions in Montana?
The 2007 plan included an inventory, very detailed inventory of greenhouse gases in Montana. It was consumption-based, so there was a bit of a fence built around coal strip in the 2007 plan, which we recognize emits a great deal of greenhouse gases, but this was consumption-based, so it was based on the energy consumed by Montana. It didn't discuss the energy that was being exported to the West Coast. I think the 2020 plan also included an inventory, and it was, I think, updated based on some of the 2007 numbers. I'm not as familiar with the 2020 inventory, though.
Did DEQ have any authority to implement any of these recommendations regarding greenhouse gases without legislative direction?
Maybe in some small spaces, there was some room in terms of a directive from the governor's office about heating and lighting in use. Recycling was another theme. And I think after you saw this 2007 plan, there was a very concerted effort related to recycling across state government. But in a greater sense, in terms of establishing a GHG policy for the state or a policy to reduce emissions by X amount by X date, that was solely in the hands of the legislature.
How about for climate change? Did you have any independent authority to implement any of these recommendations as to permitting statutes without explicit legislative direction?
And Your Honor, I'll object to this line of questioning as calling for a legal conclusion here.
She's an expert in
oral.
Does DEQ have any authority to act without the explicit direction from the legislature regarding climate change impacts?
It does not.
Let's talk about greenhouse gas emissions in Montana. Is there a greenhouse gas inventory in Montana?
Right now, we rely largely on the information here provided by the Environmental Protection Agency, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency, in terms of the information they provide through a very easy-to-use tracking device that includes information about greenhouse gas emissions by economic sector in Montana.
Can you explain the breakdown by sector?
It shows the percent change in the energy sector, which we've certainly had a lot of discussion about. Emissions have declined 37% since 1990. Agriculture has increased 7.8%. Industry down 9.6%, transportation 27.5% increase. And then we also have the commercial increase and the residential increase. Energy, electric power industry is down 37%. And as you heard in the testimony, that's driven by, for example, the closure of Colstrip Units 1 and 2, Corret, Lewis and Clark. I'm not sure if Lewis and Clark is included in that number, but significant decline in those emissions.
You said energy, but what goes into that energy calculation?
And it's the electric power industry. So I would assume that is coal-fired power plants, natural gas power plants, other energy generators.
And what is Montana's gross GHG emissions between 1990 and 2020? Has it declined or has it increased?
Obviously, it's declined by roughly 4%, according to the EPA, yes.
There was testimony last week that every ton matters when it comes to CO2. Can you provide some context around that for Montana?
We're having a very robust discussion about the fossil fuel industry and fossil fuel activities. If we're talking about every ton matters from a policy perspective, I think the state of Montana may need to have some difficult conversations. I realize agriculture is a bit of a sacred cow, all puns intended. I'm not talking about tractors here, but agriculture is an emitter of greenhouse gas emissions. And if every ton matters, there needs to be some discussion. Transportation as well brings in the issue of land use planning and land use development. A lot of Montanans like to live out of town, so to speak, and have an acre or two and a horse and a pasture and drive to work every day. It just brings up some pretty meaty discussions. It's a broader discussion than just fossil fuel activities, although I agree that the fossil fuel activities are the largest contributor in Montana.
Let's talk about MEPA alternatives analysis. There was testimony last week from Ms. Hedges. Is there a MEPA analysis required under Montana Code Annotated 75.1.201, subsection 1B, Romanet 5, and 75.1.220?
Yes, 75.1.220 is the actual definition of an alternatives analysis, and it's pretty clear, I think, what it lays out. But I think an important part to point out is that for a project that is not a state-sponsored project, so for a permit request by an entity, it does not include an alternative facility or an alternative to the proposed project itself. So where there was testimony, for example, that if we received an application for a coal-fired power plant, we can do an alternatives analysis of, let's say, a wind farm under MEPA. We're clearly prohibited from proposing as an alternative a wind farm. I think another important distinction here that should be discussed is that these alternatives are not binding based on this language in 75.1.201. Neither the alternatives analysis nor the resulting recommendations bind the project sponsor to take a recommended course of action. The project sponsor may agree, but again, they're not binding. These are simple recommendations.
Did Ms. Hedges accurately describe the alternatives analysis under MEPA?
I think that the description was accurate, but missing these two very important details.
What does the MEPA alternatives analysis require?
As the definition points out, it's an evaluation of different parameters, mitigation measures, or control measures that would accomplish the same objectives as those included in the proposed action. But again, there is a fence around that it's not an alternative facility or an alternative to the project itself.
Do you consider the Supreme Court's direction in legal cases in your work at DEQ?
Absolutely.
Are you familiar with the Bitter-Rooters case?
Yes, I am.
Your Honor, I'm going to object to Ms. Nowakowski interpreting a case law for us today.
I don't really want to hear interpretations of case law, so I will sustain that objection. She's not an attorney, and I don't know what value this would be to me.
What is your understanding of the Bitter-Rooters case?
In objection, Your Honor.
It's a Montana Supreme Court law that
so you would use the case law to implement what you do to you consider it in your job?
Yes, I would use the Supreme Court this ruling in terms of taking a look at MEPA and the parameters around that MEPA analysis related to a permitting action.
Okay, well, I guess I'll let her tell me how she would apply this to her training.
Sure. So, for example, the way I would apply this is as it's outlined, you know, MIPA has a very much a purpose, you know, as outlined, as we've discussed. However, again, that purpose is put in the perspective of where we have regulatory authority. And so MIPA doesn't fill a gap that is left in that regulatory authority. And that's important with the Bitterrooters case, that there has to be a harmony between the limitations in that regulatory action and then the beneficial manifest of an outline of MIPA.
If you could put your takeaway from the Bitterrooters case in plain language, when you are doing a MIPA analysis, I'm asking her about her work.
Your Honor.
Well, I think she's answered the question.
I'm asking her about how she applies this specifically to an EA or an EIS.
And I would assume she consults her legal counsel at DQ.
Do you consult your legal counsel when you're applying Montana Supreme Court case law in EISs and EAs, or do you exercise independent discretion based on your understanding?
I work closely with my legal staff.
I understand that, but having read the case and understanding it, do you then proceed to do your work?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Do you need to consult legal counsel on every EA and EIS in order to apply the Bitterrooters decision?
Certainly not. It's a standard understanding that, again, if there are gaps in our regulatory authority, MIPA does not, because of its manifest, fill those gaps. That's just a standard practice throughout the development of all MIPA documents.
Can you give me a specific example of something that would be beyond your authority to consider in a permitting decision that would be considered in the MIPA analysis?
And Your Honor, this calls for speculation as well as a legal conclusion.
Can you give me a specific example from your work?
Sure. A specific example from our work is the greenhouse gases. We don't have regulatory authority under the Montana Strip and Underground Mining Reclamation Act to regulate greenhouse gases. MIPA does not, therefore, grant me the authority to regulate greenhouse gases.
Let's talk about the meaning of procedural. Did you also hear Ms. Hedges testify before this court that MIPA is not procedural?
I did.
Is that accurate?
I would disagree with that. The law clearly, 75-1-1-1-2-1, states that MIPA, the Montana Environmental Policy Act, is procedural.
And I'll object if that's misstating Ms. Hedges' testimony.
I do recall her testimony, and I think she agreed it was procedural, but she said it implemented. So I understand you've got some disagreement with the way they're characterizing it.
Ms. Hedges said that it was a process. Can you respond to that?
I can speak to how I view procedure being different from process. I feel like a process is a specific set of steps that are taken to reach a certain goal, where adversely, a procedure is a precise set of instructions on how to complete a task. And so I do believe there is a difference there between a process and a procedure.
What would be an example of a substantive statute?
A substantive statute would be, for example, Title 82, Chapter 4, Part 2, the Montana Strip and Underground Mining Reclamation Act.
What did Ms. Hedges testify to regarding DEQ's denial of fossil fuel permits?
I believe Ms. Hedges testified that DEQ has never denied a fossil fuel permit application.
Is she correct?
I would certainly disagree with that characterization. And before I kind of walk into the slides, I would say I do take some offense at an insinuation that the folks at DEQ are simply putting their stamp of approval on any application that rolls in the door. There isn't a single person who works at DEQ who doesn't care deeply about the environment and care deeply about the laws that they're charged with implementing and enforcing. These are very robust permitting processes. These people thrive on poking holes in applications and making sure they meet the letter of the law in terms of regulation. And they spend hours and hours, and they are experts on this. Getting back to that issue, and in terms of the Montana Strip and Underground Mining Reclamation Act, our authority for that act is laid out again in Title 82, Chapter 2. And there's a two-part process when we talk about coal mine applications. There's an acceptability process and there's a completeness process. And this is outlined in 82-4-231. It's an example from the last year, Area B, AM5. The blue on the left is the area that was proposed for mining. After 11 rounds of deficiency, between 5 and 7 years, depending on who you ask, Area B AM5 was approved, and that's the middle slide. But there on the far right, if you lie the two on top of one another, you can see that roughly 7,000 acres of proposed mining was excluded from that mining application. And again, that was within our regulatory authority. That blue area, the Richard Cooley area, could not be permitted without violating or not meeting material damage statutes. And so therefore DEQ did not permit that for mining. So another example is in Rosebud Area F, another application that came in. There were aspects of that application that simply could not meet with the requirements of the regulation, and they were removed from the permit. There were certain mine passes that were not able to be made. Another great example is Otter Creek, which we've heard testimony about in 2017.
Your Honor, I'm going to object to this, as Ms. Nowakowski in her deposition clearly would not answer questions regarding projects that happened before her time at DEQ, which began in April of 2021.
Correct.
Well, I believe there was a motion in limine about her talking about things she had said she didn't know about before. So the objection is sustained.
I'm showing you 82.4.202 on the slide. What does this section state?
We've had a lot of discussions here about Article 9 of the Montana Constitution and implementing the clean and healthful aspects of the environment requirements. I think it's important also to note that there are several permitting statutes, including the Strip and Underground Mining Reclamation Act, where the legislature, in its authority under Article 2, Section 1, Subsection 2, has come in and said, this act and the regulations established in this act implement Article 9 of the Montana Constitution.
Just for clarification, what is the acronym that describes the statute?
MSUMRA.
Is this the coal permitting statute?
This is the statute for permitting coal mines, yes.
There's been testimony about permitting statutes and about MEPA statutes. Can you explain the difference between these two types of laws?
We have parallel tracks here. We receive an application for a permit to mine coal, for example, and we examine that within the requirements of Title 82, Chapter 4, Part 2, to make sure it meets those substantial requirements, that it doesn't have material damage, that it doesn't impact the alluvial valley of floors and preclude agricultural activities. And at the same time, on the same parallel track, we have the MEPA analysis taking place. They aren't always parallel. The MEPA Act can feed into that regulatory act, but again, it's within our regulatory authority. So for example, if through the MEPA process, we receive public comments that, let's say, in the work we're doing, we missed a cultural resource, that there were tepee rings that we didn't know about. Clearly in Title 82, Chapter 4, Part 2, we have authority to regulate and determine that mine passes not be made or certain actions not be taken to protect those cultural resources. And so that's where the two feed together. Where they don't feed together is where there are findings where we don't have regulatory authority.
Let's talk about whether DEQ has authority to deny a permit. Do any MEPA statutes explicitly address denying a permit based on MEPA?
No, MEPA says the contrary, that you cannot condition or modify or deny a permit based on MEPA without the underlying regulatory authority.
Are there any MEPA statutes that explicitly address whether MEPA has any regulatory authority?
MEPA is procedural and in accordance, I think it's in 75.1.201, where it explicitly says MEPA is not regulatory and provides no additional regulatory authority.
Are there any MEPA statutes that explicitly address whether MEPA can withhold or make a permit contingent upon a MEPA analysis?
Not specifically. However, has been testified that you must do a MEPA analysis for a state action, and a state action is a permitting decision.
Would DEQ have any authority to deny a coal mine permit application if the application is acceptable under MSUMRA?
Objection, that calls for a legal conclusion.
Ms. Nowakowski has testified that she applies the laws, works with them every day. She's an expert in bill drafting, and she works with court opinions every day in guiding her work.
Overruled, I'll let you answer.
If 75.1.201 subsection 2A is declared unconstitutional, would DEQ have any authority to deny a coal permit application if the permit application is acceptable under MSUMRA?
No, it would not. Title 82, Chapter 4, Part 2 provides no regulatory authority for greenhouse gases or climate impacts.
Same question, but for natural gas fired power plant.
No, it would not. The Montana Clean Air Act doesn't provide DEQ with the authority to deny a permit based on a greenhouse gas emissions or climate impacts.
If the MEPA provision at issue were declared invalid, would DEQ have the authority to deny a certificate for a pipeline under the Major Facility Siting Act?
No, again, under Title 75, Chapter 20, which where a lot of these pipelines receive their certificates, provides no regulatory authority for greenhouse gas or climate change impacts.
Are the injuries that plaintiffs have described fairly traceable to DEQ's actions taken pursuant to the MEPA provision at issue?
I'll object to that. Same.
What is your opinion as to whether the injuries that plaintiffs have described are related to DEQ's actions?
It outlines the various regulatory acts where DEQ has its authority, the Clean Air Act, the water quality laws, the solid waste management laws, Major Facility Siting Act, the Strip and Underground, Open Cut Metal Mine Reclamation Act. And on the right, and these are just a handful of the various bills, legislation I'm familiar with because I was involved in the drafting of some of them over time, that would have provided some sort of authority, some sort of regulatory authority for greenhouse gas emissions, establishing various climate action plans and directing the DEQ to inventory and collect information about greenhouse gases and then utilize that in its permitting decisions.
What is your opinion as to whether the injuries that plaintiffs have described are related to DEQ's inaction?
Our authority lies within these regulatory acts, and the plaintiffs would need to challenge these permitting decisions under our authority in these regulatory acts, under the Clean Air Act of Montana, under the Strip and Underground Mining Reclamation Act. MEPA doesn't provide any additional regulatory authority.
If the MEPA provision at issue were declared invalid, would it change DEQ's permitting?
It would not change the actual regulatory act and the actual permitting. It could potentially, depending on what the court order was, change what happens under the environmental review in the MEPA statute, but it would not change the regulatory act, the act of actually issuing, conditioning, modifying, or denying a permit.
So you agree the answer is no?
Yes. In the regulatory statutes, that is where our authority lies, to modify, condition, issue, or deny a permit, not under MEPA. MEPA is procedural in nature, and MEPA does not provide us with the authority to condition or modify or approve or deny a permit. Those lie solely within these various acts.
Thank you. No further questions.
You have just heard testimony by Montana Department of Environmental Quality Director Christopher Dorrington and Sonia Nowakowski, Montana DEQ Administrator for the Air, Energy, and Mining Division. Due to broadcast time limitations, the cross-examination of Ms. Nowakowski by plaintiff attorney Barbara Chilcutt will be in the next edition of Echotone's Daily Audio Diary. Echotones is a Beyond the Deep End production, hosted and produced by Joy LaClaire. You can hear our ongoing Echotones coverage of the historic Held v. State of Montana trial by going to our website, forthright.media. The digests are also archived on Gallatin Valley Community Radio KGVM's website, kgvm.org, under the heading Echotones. Thanks to Rini Keating for production assistance with these broadcasts. KGVM is a listener-sponsored community radio which depends on our listeners for financial support. You can contribute by going to kgvm.org and click on the Gold Support KGVM button at the top of the page. KGVM is a 501c3, so your contribution is tax-deductible to the fullest extent of the law. We thank you for listening and for your support. Till next time, this is Joy LaClaire signing out for now.